Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. A day in the life of Andre Pirtle can range from delivering water to Milwaukee's homeless, leading youth groups at Emmanuel Church in Brookfield, where he's a pastor, to working with the outreach group Street Life. Not yet 30 years old, Pirtle has dedicated his life to serving Milwaukee's communities and lifting people out of the pressures that he once faced himself, whether it's as a social worker, a pastor, life coach, or at times a first responder. Pirtle says it all comes down to connecting with someone through conversation. He joined me in the studio for a conversation about his work, which was featured in a profile in this month's Milwaukee Magazine. Andre Pirtle, welcome to Lake Effect.
It's awesome to be here on this semi-warm day. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you in here. So you are the feature in this month's Milwaukee Magazine. It describes you as a pastor, social worker, life coach, first responder, lots of descriptions, lots of jobs. How would you say you describe yourself?
Honestly, I'm just a kid from Milwaukee. Like, I don't think there's anything special about me. I think we all see problems. Sometimes we walk over them, and sometimes we just try to, I don't even want to say fix them, we try to work on them. And I'm just a person who just want to work on a few issues that I see. So, no, I'm not special at all. The people around me are special, and I think they think I am, but it's really them.
Yeah, so you're involved in a lot of different organizations, things you do on your own. So how about we give listeners a little example? What's the day in the life of Andre Pirtle?
To be honest, just being like straight up, it really depends on the day. I work in different communities, and different communities have different, not just cultures, but different things that are important to them, different ways of doing things, and different time frames they work. So one community, you know, they might not wake up or work until 12 in the afternoon, right? But another community might start early. So I guess it depends on the day, but this is an example of how my whole night could switch. So usually I do street life, and street life is when we work with the men and women who are homeless, men and women who are human trafficked, because it is men and women, and just work with people who don't have housing for that night, or just in general. So as I'm preparing to go there, I get a phone call saying that one of my youth group kids, and this is one that I mentor, has been in my house, has pet my dog. he's missing. And he didn't come to youth group that night, and we looked for him prior. We just thought he was at a park. So from about maybe 9:30 to maybe some point after 12 o'clock, we were looking for this kid. So that starts off my day, but because I did that, I didn't do street life. But either way it was going, I wouldn't have been out that late regardless, whether I was working with men and women we know, or if it would have just been finding Noah, which we did. And a huge shout out to Milwaukee, because a lot of people helped out. People stopped me who I didn't know and just said, "Hey, Andre, we know you from Facebook. We're looking for that kid right now."
So you did eventually find him.
Yes, and then, yes, we did.
Then did you try and, like, backtrack and kind of go back on the main road of where your day would have gone had you not gotten that phone call? You volunteer, you know, helping out the homeless population. You got the youth group. Mm-hmm. You're a pastor at a church. So
yep.
I imagine you are just dealing with a lot of people of all different ages, of all different situations.
I am. But it's a group of us. So I think I get a lot of credit because I'm probably the most charismatic one. And be honest, I'm probably just the youngest one. So You're supposed to pass the buck off to, or pass it off to the next generation.
Right.
I'm just the kid that they pass it off to.
Well, and on that note, being a younger activist and worker and person in the community, and having faced some of the same pressures of a lot of people you help in this city, I'm curious, where does your drive come from to be involved in this kind of work so young and to take a leadership position in it?
I think that, I really believe this, I think that a lot of times, people don't have a person to be solid or be consistent with them, right? And so one of the things, I learned this at an early age, I'm dyslexic. So if I didn't have somebody there every day to help me read words like and the, and even the big words at that time for me, like difficult, if I didn't have someone there every day, my life would have been dramatically different. And I want to be that. I want to be consistent. In people's lives. I'm going to be consistent in the work I do. And if I'm just being honest about it, I believe in a higher power. I believe that what we do on earth in some way, shape, or form, and I don't know what it's going to look like in another plane, but I believe that we answer for these things. And I think that as a kid, I would spill milk. And if I would walk over that spilt milk and go outside and play, when I came home, my mom would have a few choice words for me. Why didn't you pick that up? You had the strength to do it. I think people are the same way. I think on the other side, I might be asked, hey, Andre, you seen that guy? He was going through something. Why didn't you talk to him? So for me, it echoes into my afterlife, too.
What would you say is your most valuable tool or resource that helps you not just manage the challenges of your various jobs, but connect with others on that personal level? You mentioned consistency is a big point. What else would you say?
Relationships. Relationships. Like, everything boils down to a relationship. Like, as much as we're dealing with, or I have the, and they give me, let me say, they give me an awesome opportunity to assist in their issue. They're the master of their own face. They have the keys. But the relationships we establish, they realize that I'm not necessarily dealing with their issue. I'm dealing with a person. We're working with a person. We're living life together. And, like, the relationship aspect of thing, if you lose that, then everything falls by the wayside. Because it's not just, it's not a pastor just come up to you, praise the Lord, saints. No, it's your friend. It's a companion, someone who wants you to be better than where you are or to just see you thrive. And it's that relationship aspect of things that helps me, because a lot of times I'm not doing things alone. You know, there's people who I work with who want to work with me. So delegation is cool, but partnership is better for me. So, and that's what we do a lot. So that's out of relationships.
You first got a little spark of the counselor life at a YMCA summer camp.
Yes.
It was when you were first introduced.
Yes.
So
yes.
Did you think that that first summer of doing that would spark your journey to becoming a pastor, becoming a community activist?
No, not at all. I think that, like, so I got out of my neighborhood because there were things going on in my neighborhood.
The Woodlawn neighborhood, right?
Yep, the Woodlands, yeah.
Yeah, Woodlands.
There were things going on at that time that I had no business being a part of, and I just needed escape. I think we all need a break, whether that's mentally or physically. And I got out, but it gave me, like, this awesome opportunity to just experience people. I think it's different when people, when they believe in you. And I had a group of people who believed in me. And I think that sparked all of this. But even, like, just being in nature, it sparked the conversation of, yo, do I have purpose? Is there a higher power? And if it is, what's my role? But no, I never expected to be a pastor. I laugh about it some days and I cry about it some days. I never saw it. I never saw this even being a possibility. So it wasn't like plan A, B, or C. No, it was like, it wasn't even on the radar. It wasn't even one of the alphabetical letters for me. So,
what were you most nervous or concerned about when you first started counseling at YMCA? You know, any of this stuff came, what was your main concern?
It was the first time, actually the second time outside of babysitting and my sister, it was the first time that I was responsible for a life. And if something happens to this child on my watch, then, you know, I got to own that. You know, not just with the parents, but even in my, you know, with my self-esteem. So I was nervous of teaching the kids the wrong thing, because I didn't always know what the parents taught. And I don't want to do anything counterproductive to what a parent is teaching their child. But I also didn't want my goofy 17-year-old tendencies to rub off on a 12-year-old, and they're doing the things I'm doing because I'm unsure of who I am. So I just didn't want to lead kids in the wrong direction. That's honestly still one of my biggest fears, leading people in the wrong direction.
Well, and as a pastor, you work at Emmanuel Church,
yep.
And mentoring obviously played a big role in your life when you took on that mantle, but also the people who have helped you. And I want to touch upon Max Ramsey real quick. So he's the one who kind of brought you into the church and helped shape your role as a pastor. So how has the relationship with him influenced what you do, how you view things in a different perspective with your work?
You know, I could say so much about Max. You know, Max is one of my best friends. I love this guy, you know. And he's influenced me in so many different ways where the literature I read, my viewpoint, I dress better than him, so not style. But he's had such a big impact on my life. Not too often do you get, you know, people who are set in their career. Like, Max didn't need to help me out, if we're being honest. Max could have retired. Max could retire right now, and his legacy is beautiful. But he took he gambled on me. He gambled on a kid from the inner city, but it went back to that camp mentality. I don't want to let this guy down. And not just him, but my father. Max and my father know each other, you know, and there's a mutual respect. And I just didn't want to let this guy down. But he saw something in me that sometimes I still struggle to see in myself. And he believed in me, so he's a huge influence on my life. Huge. He's Batman, and I'm Robin.
So it seems that, you know, you often are interacting with at-risk, transient populations, kids who need that mentor in their life, that support, that person who is consistent. What are the biggest misconceptions about the people you reach out to and work with every day that you'd like the public to push aside?
Laziness. I don't think... I think that the population of people I work with, one of the populations, they are assumed to be lazy. And I don't think people understand the effects of generational... being broken down for generations. Example, so if your grandfather went to college, or maybe he didn't, maybe went to a trade school because of the era, right? Odds are your father or your went to college, right? So odds are you'll go to school. But what if your grandfather was disenfranchised and had no wealth to pass down to the son, and the father was never able to pass that down to you? So I think a lot of times we inherit things from our parents, and what happens when your parents don't have a lot to inherit to you? And I also think people have been beat down for generations to where it's hard for them to even contemplate certain things as far as, you know, making it out. You go to the things that people around you have gone to. And if no one has ever went to school, if no one has ever made it out of the neighborhood you come out of, why would you have ambitions? Because you've never even seen it happen around you to make it out. And I think a lot of times that gets confused as being lazy. And a lot of times it's just a lack of direction. And probably the biggest one, resources. If all communities had the same resources, it'd be a different ballgame. But all communities don't. And I think that's a big misconception.
In the article, you're quoted as saying, sometimes it starts with a simple conversation. Mm-hmm. What kind of conversations do you think the people of Milwaukee should be having with each other?
Oh, man, redlining? What is redlining, and why does that exist, and why did it exist, and not just that, but does that still affect us today? What does poverty look like? I think conversations about the trade school should open up. I think conversations about equal pay for women should open up. I think, and probably this is a huge one, conversations about mental health. Mental health needs to be spoken about, and it's a taboo right now. And it doesn't have to be. When you get a cut in your foot, you know where to go. But when you're going through something psychologically, where do you go? And if you don't know where to go, that's what we need to be talking about. So for me, those are the things I need to be talking about. And also the homeless population, how do we support them? And what does support even look like? And that's just a few of my ideas about what I think we should be speaking about.
Some of these challenges and issues obviously have persisted over time, you know, such as the homeless population, poverty, gun violence here in the city. What's your greatest concern or fear if a trend continues unchanged?
If it continues to be unchanged, well, it becomes a part of our culture. That becomes the norm. When trends stay in place for a long period of time, we adapt those and say that's just a part of who we are. And I don't think that's the case in all scenarios.
With your work, you are probably out, 12 hours a day, work days?
Some days, yeah. Some days 12, some days shorter, mm-hmm. Some days longer. Being honest, it just depends on the day. Between my father and Max, they've taught me it's not about the hours you put in, it's about what you do in those hours. So I can put in 24 hours in a full day, but if the job didn't get done, what's the point? If I didn't chip something off of the block, it doesn't matter. So I kind of was trained to work until completion.
How do you manage to take care of yourself in the midst of all the demands that are asked of you and the situations you go through and the emotional investment you put into your everyday?
So I got a fine wife. So hanging with her, to be honest with you. Letting people invest in me. I didn't know how to do that at first. I knew how to give, but it took me years to realize I need to receive. And I think that allowing people to do that, not denying them that, because when you deny people the opportunity to give, you deny them of sometimes their gifting. Maybe their gifting is giving. When you say no, they sit there like, what do I do now? And I think researching how to eat, I think it's therapeutic. Researching history, I really love history. Working out, praying and really reading the Bible, but also, like I said, different forms of literature. So those are the things that help me out. They soothe either my mind, my body, or my spirit. So those are the things I try to keep in constant line from my perspective.
Well, I know you're certainly gifting a lot of things to people within this community, and I want to thank you, Andre, for taking a few minutes out of your day to speak with me about yourself.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Andre Pirtle is a pastor, community activist, mentor, and much more. You can read the profile piece on Pirtle, written by Zach Brook, in this month's Milwaukee Magazine.